It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you're a regular listener to our program, then you know that we talk with the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, on a regular basis, usually about once a month. Mayor Peduto was sworn in a year ago and has had a very busy start to his term. He joins us now in Studio A to reflect on what's happened and look at what is ahead. Mayor Peduto, Happy New Year. Welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
I would say, you know, I recently did a how was the first 1 year, and I said exhausting. It's good. I mean, things are good, but at the same time, this morning has just been a lot of different things getting thrown at us all at once. So,
well, we have a very fluid.
So if this show doesn't live up to the great quality standards that we have been trying to present on ESA, I apologize early to anybody who's listening.
Oh, I'm sure everything will be fine. And we're just honored to be in the mix with Meet the Press and Undercover Boss and that show on Fox. What's the guy's name? O'Reilly something?
Something like that.
Yeah, okay. So I'd like to begin by talking about what's in the news. We have learned that Pennsylvania's capital city, it was reported yesterday, Harrisburg is facing a lawsuit believed to be the first under a new state law intended to give gun owners and gun rights groups a chance at taking down municipal firearms ordinances, which many people see as common sense gun laws. Pittsburgh has these gun measures, and apparently there is news being made today with regard to this.
Well, just – and this is one of those things that got thrown at me right before we went on the air. Apparently the NRA is suing the city of Pittsburgh. So this is – when we passed Lost and Stolen Handgun, I mean, we had months of discussion on this from legal experts and everything else. What we were doing – we understand the laws of the state of Pennsylvania. We cannot enact laws which would inhibit – the right of a person to own a gun. Lost and Stolen Handgun doesn't do that. It says that once your gun is lost or stolen, once you are no longer in possession of the gun that you legally own, you have to report it lost or stolen. It deals with unlawful guns, guns that are getting into the hands in our neighborhoods, guns that are being used as a way for felons who cannot purchase guns to be able to purchase them, guns that are being used in the drug trade within our cities, guns that kill. And we're getting illegal guns off the street. That's why this measure is supported by the International Association of Chiefs of Police, because it's a common sense way to lessen death. Now, so the NRA gets upset about it. They go and they try to sue. Gun owners of Pennsylvania or some other organization tries to sue. The court throws them out. They say, you don't have standing. Did somebody... some municipality come after you because you didn't report? They said, no, we don't like this law. Well, you can't do that in the state of Pennsylvania. 200 plus years of history of what the legal process is, except for this one group. And the state legislature created a new law for them that gave them standing. Groups like the NRA that would never have standing in any court. Now there is a new precedent being set by the state. And not only that.
The burden is no longer on them to prove that this law is harming them.
Yes. Which has never happened in the state before, ever, ever. I mean, people have to understand that. And not only that, but they can sue and then they can claim all their legal costs on the municipality. In other words, they can drag out a court case for years, hire a team of 40 attorneys out of New York City. And if we don't capitulate and say, okay, we'll take the law down, they will threaten us with that. And the state put that added burden on municipalities, something else that's never been done.
These plaintiffs will bury you in paperwork and you'll end up soaking up what could end up being a huge cost.
Even if they lose, we still have to pay. Now, that's not enough. There's also a provision in state law which requires that any bill that's being voted on can only be voted on for the merit of that one bill. This got attached to a bill that dealt with scrap iron, and they added it onto a scrap iron bill, which is unconstitutional. And all of that now, they're telling us we have to back down and take that law off the books. We have to fight, and we have to fight not only on the issue of guns. That's part of it, and the illegal guns that are on our streets, and we can trace it back. And whenever we do, and we find who this gun came from, you know what they say to us? Oh,
what?
It was stolen. Oh, you know what? I lost that gun. And it is a get-out-of-jail-free card that was being used over and over and over and over again, and people are dying. But we also have to fight for the constitutional process that separates the legislature from the judicial and allows so that one group will never have power like this in the state of Pennsylvania. This is, you know, I want people to gather around it with a flag waving and saying to the NRA and the other groups that are trying to force this unconstitutional nonsense down the throat of Pennsylvania, we stand for the constitutional rights of Pennsylvania as well as the people who have been the victims of nonsensical gun laws in the state.
And so Pittsburgh and other cities are challenging this state law in court.
Pittsburgh, Mayor Nutter from Philadelphia, Mayor Gray from Lancaster are the three of us who have decided that we are going to challenge this and we are going to take it. And as of, I guess, 1 hour ago, the three of us have been sued by the NRA.
And oftentimes when this topic and other controversial topics come up, as a host, I feel it's incumbent upon me to play the devil's advocate. But these are the laws we're talking about here that are being potentially usurped by this state law are designed, one, to enforce a law that prevents straw purchases, because felons, there's a law in the books, a felon cannot own a handgun, but oftentimes they come into possession of them through people that are willing to sell them the gun and then, you know, tell say later on if confronted about it that, oh, well, I lost it or it was stolen, that kind of thing. So some very shady practices going on. And part of my point in bringing that up is that we've had people who are NRA members call the show and say, you know, I'm a member of the NRA, but I cannot support what the NRA is doing here. So this – who knows? This could cause some people within that organization to break ranks.
Let's think about it, because the state legislature also tried to push through a law that required IDing of people to vote, which the high court threw out as being unconstitutional. They tried to pass a bill that said that the sanctity of marriage bill, which then the high court threw out and said was unconstitutional. They tried to push a law that guaranteed to drillers for Marcellus Shell that there would be no zoning rights of local municipalities, which the high court threw out as unconstitutional. There is a part of the state legislature, which is a radical part, that for the sake they say that to protect the Constitution is passing laws that constantly are being thrown out because they're unconstitutional. And this one is the next one in that long line. And at some point, there really needs to be a waking up in Pennsylvania of what's trying to happen here. These are the rights that every Pennsylvanian is given. We're not taking away anyone's right to own a gun. We're not taking away anyone's right to own 10 guns. What we're doing is saying is when it's lost or stolen, it needs to be reported so that gun doesn't end up on the street killing people.
The other item in the news is Congress and President Obama are heading toward a showdown over immigration. The House expecting to vote today on a bill to fund the Department of Homeland Security, but with language attached that would aggressively roll back several of the president's immigration actions. You are one of the big city mayors who has come out strongly in support of the president on his immigration measures. Explain why.
Well, years ago, when we were council members, Eric Garcetti from Los Angeles, Bill de Blasio from New York, and I worked together to create an organization called Local Progress. There were actually 38 of us, almost all of us, Joe Moore, an alderman from Chicago, Nick Licata from Seattle. We worked together. We felt that if ALEC was going to supply state legislators with legislation that was being pushed by the right wing, that then we should work together on progressive legislation on the local level. And we created through the University of Wisconsin, ALICE, which is a think tank of progressive ideas. De Blasio ran, Garcetti ran on the ideas that immigration was good for New York, good for Los Angeles. And in Pittsburgh, what we've seen is 40 years without immigration and the hollowing of our neighborhoods. The neighborhoods that could have been rebuilt in the 70s and the 80s would have been rebuilt if we had a vibrant immigrant community that was moving here and would see these new jobs that have been created even expanded. But on the other end as well, so many of the people who left CMU and Pitt and others to go back home have become the leading companies of their countries, these engineers and scientists. We want to give them a home too. If you talk to Dr. Suresh at Carnegie Mellon and you talk about the five wealthiest people in Turkey, all multi-billionaires, three of them share a common thing, a degree from Carnegie Mellon. Imagine if we could have kept one of them here in Pittsburgh. So we've gathered together on the local level to work with the president to say that on the areas where we're affected most, not in Washington, but right here in the cities of America, we support his initiatives and we want to work with the federal government. And I think that what you've seen during the second term, especially in the past 2 years with the president, is that the roadblocks that he has been given in the gridlock in Washington, like a rock in a river, he's finding ways to work around it, working with governors on new initiatives and working with mayors on initiatives like immigration. So if there are ways that we can create pilot programs, if there are ways that we can create opportunities to be able to allow for greater immigration to occur, then these mayors and I are saying we support that and we're willing to be the areas to work that can make it work.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. And if you have a comment or question for our guest, the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at essspgh, hashtag EPLive. Let's talk about Undercover Boss. This brought you and the city some well-deserved positive attention when you interacted with the city workers. You were disguised as a co-worker or trainee, if you will. Ed Chadwick. There he is.
From Loretta, Kentucky. So Ed Chadwick.
Who knew you were such a good actor?
Some people. So and then most of the people who watched it found out the opposite. Ed Chadwick, right? So what day is today? Today is the 14th. Happy birthday, Rick Chadwick. Best friend growing up. My name was supposed to be Ed Denny after Ebenezer Denny, first mayor of the city of Pittsburgh, but they thought that somebody might be able to figure that out. Uh-huh. I don't know how, but they thought that. So they said, come up with a name that you'll be able to remember. So I chose Rick Chadwick, whose birthday, 50th birthday is today. And I said, I'll do Ed Chadwick. And every time I'd go on, I'd say, hi, my name's Ed Chadwick. Hi, Lawrence, my name's Ed Chadwick. And they'd come back, they'd say, okay, Bill, just say, hi, my name's Ed. And I'd be, oh, okay. And they go, okay, let's do that again. I go, hi, my name's Ed Chadwick. Just so when Rick was watching it and his mom was watching and his sister was watching it, they'd laugh their heads off. That was the only reason. Loretto, Kentucky. You got to find a place that you're going to be able to remember, somewhere small that no one will know. Did you ever hear Maker's Mark?
Of course.
Loretto, Kentucky. So
there you go.
And then I did the research on it. Plus, it's going to be hard not looking Italian. A name like Loretto, I could be like, well, there's, you know, a couple of Italians that live down there working the mines.
Yep. So this show, when it aired, it was amazing, the warm feeling, the tweets that were coming out and the reaction on social media. But then there was questions raised about the outside sources, the unnamed friends of yours.
I want to do like –
I'm sorry. The friends who provided the cash gifts of these workers featured on the show. So why – explain why you have not been able to disclose the sources of the money.
So there's actually about three reasons. Number one, this wasn't supposed to air to March. So we didn't do all the fundraising. We got up to a certain point and then we figured it was Christmas. You know, we'll wait and then we'll come back.
You figured you had 3 months and you could pick it up in earnest after the holidays.
Yeah. And during the month of November, December, I was raising money with a group of about six mayors across the state for Mayors Against Hunger. We raised $250,000 to do food banks before Christmas. That became priority. By the way, nobody's asked me where I got that money, which is, you know, aren't those people also who gave money to me there going to be able to get whatever they want in city government? And since I've become a politician, since I got elected in 2001, I've probably raised over or about $1.5 million, $2 million and for other organizations. I do that. I do charity work a lot. But it's interesting that it came to this. So number one, we had time.
You understand why this is important to people.
Somewhat I do. Somewhat it just seems silly. But number two, we had one group that was a significant donor that wanted to remain anonymous. And then when we checked the rules after we were asked with Right to Know, we told them they're going to have to report. So we had to find somebody else for that. And the third, the biggest sponsor who it's come out is Visit Pittsburgh. Doesn't have their board meeting until February. And we couldn't say what the amount was going to be before their board had an ability to vote on it And we didn't want to get their director in trouble. Quite honestly, you know, he made a commitment of a certain amount, but we were going to need more. And we didn't want to have that without it going through the full board process. Now, it's been said that, you know, we took government money. I said we weren't going to use city money, and I kept to that. But the fact was, Visit Pittsburgh isn't funded 100% by government money. And the reports that came out and the editorials and the shock jocks that have been jumping on this really should just looked at their budget. You know, their budget's also sponsorship, advertising, membership of about $1.5 million. They have an advertising budget that's nearly $6 million. We took 1% of that to be able to promote Pittsburgh for one full hour on network television. If they were to buy one ad, if Visit Pittsburgh were to purchase one ad during Undercover Boss, 30 seconds would have cost them nearly $250,000. They gave $50,000, hopefully $50,000, for an hour. That's a pretty good ROI. And what it did is it promoted Pittsburgh in exactly the way that we wanted it to be promoted. And the reason that CBS bumped it and made it the second show was they wanted it to air before Christmas because it had that good feel that they wanted before Christmas. So there's your whole conspiracy. I mean, it's to me that that's sort of seems ridiculous. We've never been trying to hide everything I said. I've said publicly, even by putting it to the URA, we were going to use Pittsburgh Foundation, but Pittsburgh Foundation can't contribute to individuals. We went through our solicitor's office. We have documents that are signed, you know, to be able to do all of this, and checked everything three times before doing it. But I'm going to wait until the last dollar is committed to and done, and then I'm going to give one list that shows every single dollar and have it finalized. Because if I leave open 20,000, people are going to be able to work out the last 20,000, and it's going to continue and continue and continue. So it's best to just get all of the work done, finalized, and then submit it.
Wait till you have all the information, then release it. And so people will, all of these folks who are concerned will be assuaged by when?
I would love to say tomorrow, but I can't, you know, as soon as that gets finished, I would hope with this whole thing would be done by the end of this month. When it came up, and we were asked about it, it was 2 days before Christmas. And tried to raise money 2 days before Christmas or the week between Christmas and New Year's. And now we're about 2 weeks out of that. We've had some good conversations. So hopefully the final commitments, a lot of this stuff has to go up the chain to be able to be approved. Some of it has to go down the chain because we've been talking to some of the presidents and they have to get their stuff in order. But there's not going to be anybody who's going to be surprising. It's all the big institutions and companies in town.
Mayor Perduto with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. Lots of folks wanting to get in on the conversation. And we'll start with Ted in Mount Washington at 412-246-2002. Ted, you're on the air. How are you?
Oh, how you doing? How you doing, Mayor?
Hey, Ted, doing pretty good.
Hey, fantastic. Hey, real quick, I'd like to know, what's the status update on nonprofits to get them to pay their fair share in taxes? I know you say you was having high-level meetings, but when would you give a press conference to let the people know where we stand with the Big Four?
Yeah. And when we came in, the idea was to get that done at the same time that we got the Act 47 and the 5-year plan done and sort of put it all together in one beautiful package with a nice bow on it. Too much work to do on the front end of getting all the different departments done and the new budget done to be able to seriously get a commitment from them. When we dropped the lawsuit with UPMC, and remember this, that the lawsuit wasn't – it would never have allowed us to tax UPMC as the whole. It would be an MRI operation that's done out of Mercy Hospital or something that we could prove on an individual basis. Different organizations, the cafeteria at Shadyside Hospital, it would be able to be taxed. It would take years and years and years to be able to get nominal amount of money. When we dropped that, the Big Four, Carnegie Mellon, University of Pittsburgh, UPMC, and – Highmark, Allegheny General, West Penn all came to the table. Our goal with them is to create a 10-year plan at a minimum that would be more significant than the $2 to $5 million that we ask for every 2 to 3 years with our little tin cup that would go into addressing not the city's budget, but the city's legacy costs, our pension, our debt, and our capital, as well as creating a fund to create opportunities for neighborhoods that have been left behind and the emergence of a new economy. Those are the three pillars of this. if you think about it in the way that you think about the Pittsburgh Promise, where there's an organization that is in charge of using these funds in order to be able to give kids an opportunity to go to college, that's what we want to create under those three processes. There's a lot of work that has to be done, though, and a lot of it has to – there's two points of it. The one is the legal side of it. We're creating something brand new. It doesn't exist, and it needs to be able to be done in the right way. The second part is the willingness and the commitment to see them, the Big Four, not only their contributions but also the other larger institutions like Point Park University, Duquesne University, Chatham, Carlo, the rest – to be a part of it at a lesser degree as well. And so we're beyond the stage of herding cats. We're at the stage now of being able to pull this together. But it doesn't happen without the commitment of the Big Four. And the Big Four, since we have pulled that lawsuit, has been at the table working with us.
Ted, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jason on the north side. Jason, you're on Essential Pittsburgh with Mayor Peduto.
Hi. Mr. Mayor, I would like to address the immigration, and I need to start this conversation with two statements. Number one, diversity is good. Diversity is a very, very good thing, but be careful what you wish for. I am friends with a member or a past member of the school board of the Baldwin-Whitehall School District. And in Baldwin-Whitehall, Catholic Charities, through the federal government, plants a lot of people within the school district of Baldwin-Whitehall, and then the federal government directly has a lot of Section 8 housing. And as a result, in our school district, there are 20 different languages spoken. The PSSA scores are really, really suffering. And, you know, that drives down the cost of real estate. The borough of Baldwin actually had to invest in putting a separate police station within the confines of the Section 8 housing to address all the new activity. So diversity is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And any child that goes to a school that has the diversity of Baldwin-Whitehall, that's a good thing. But it comes with a very, very high price. And I think the school as a whole suffers from the lack of funding from the federal government in augmenting the placement of all these different families within the school district. So I was wondering if you could, you know, address that.
Yeah. I first off, Jason, I appreciate the call and also the being able to really deliver a message that is thoughtful. Even though there may be points that I would disagree, I think that you presented in a way that this dialogue has to happen, and I wish more people had the ability to communicate like you do. It's very important.
And he's pointing out a challenge for a city like Pittsburgh, which has traditionally been a city of immigrants. So, but he's pointing out the modern problems that we now face as we encourage immigration.
1950s, 1960s, you go up to Beachview and you hear broken Italian, broken English. Now you're hearing Spanish. I mean, it's the languages that have changed. My uncle came over here and the 1920s, he went to school in Carnegie and he couldn't speak a word of English. You know, my mom was born here, the first person in this country, born in this country. You know, Carnegie had the Ukrainians and they had the Italians, and they had to figure out a way back then to be able to teach those children that were coming over with those parents the ability to speak. And then, you know who got involved? The church. And the church taught the parents how to be able to speak English. So my grandfather and my grandmother learned by going down to Holy Souls and being able to learn how to be able to speak English. That's the same challenge that we have today. That's the same challenge that we had in the 1850s when it was the Irish and the Germans, that were coming over, and the Germans that were settling, and those were the Catholics, and they were not wanted in Pittsburgh. In fact, we elected in 1850 a mayor who ran on a political party called the Anti-Catholic Party. He was actually in prison, ran on a write-in, and won. And the first thing that he did when he got elected was he put the bishop in jail for an illegal sewer tap-in at Mercy Hospital. And while the bishop was in jail, the Catholic cathedral burnt to the ground. That's also part of our history. This is nothing new. This is the constant drumbeat of the United States of America. And now what we're seeing is the immigrants not coming from Southern and Eastern Europe, but coming from all parts of the world. And we do, as Jason said, have to be prepared for that.
Thank you for that call, Jason. Before we go to break, let's take one more call from Lily in Deer Lakes. Lily, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hi, Mayor Peduto. I would like to commend you for just connecting the dots and being so involved in so many ways to bring things to Pittsburgh as a whole. But I would like to be involved and know if there's any way as a constituent that I can help support the fight against the NRA for their law against not reporting stolen guns.
Lily, thank you for the call. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to find you a place in Bloomfield to get you out of Deer Lakes. I'm joking. I think the first mayor in like 80 years that wasn't born in the city of Pittsburgh. I come from a far-off world called Scott Township. So, yes, there is. It doesn't necessarily have to be with city government, though. There's groups like Cease Fire that are involved in common sense gun laws in order to try to bring common ground and reform to Pennsylvania. And Cease Fire, which you can find right on the internet, is always looking for people. And the only way that we win, because we'll never be able to match the dollars that the NRA has, is by having more people involved. And, you know, the other way that we win is mayors around this country are really I talk to Republican mayors about this and Democratic mayors. We really want to find the common sense rules in order to be able to lessen the death rate in our cities. And I'm not blaming 100% on the guns, but I'm saying that they are elevating the death rate, and we have an ability to do something about that. And we're also one of the largest purchasers of guns. And if we get together and we use that power of purchase and we say we're only going to purchase guns from the companies that agree that these common sense approaches are something that need to happen, I think we have an ability to affect that type of change too. So between the people and the power of the purchase, because really the NRA serves as the lobbyist group for gun manufacturers. And we have the ability as the largest purchaser of guns to collectively bring about change. So I've been talking to Mayor Nutter about this. I think that, you know, we have the U.S. Conference of Mayors next week in Washington, and I'd like to really further this dialogue and see if other mayors and police chiefs will be willing to join with us to be able to get some traction under that.
And is there a more powerful lobby in the United States than the NRA?
AARP, which I'm a member since I turned 50.
Well,
you get me I want my eggs discounted at Denny's.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
On that. By the way,
hey, I turned 50 and they show up in my office. I hate to go from something so serious as NRA, but I was thinking in letters AARP. And they show up in my office. They got a giant AARP card for me and an actual real AARP card. So when you turn 50, like the last thing you want to think about is I'm getting old. And it's like, happy birthday to you.
Mixed emotions.
It's like crying, yeah, as they're handing me this. Like, but I get my eggs discounted at Denny's.
Well, hey.
Matinee movies.
One of the perks. One of the perks.
Dinner at 4 o'clock.
Before we go to break, Tim tweets, grateful to both RT at Essential Pittsburgh. Mayor Bill Peduto joins Mayor Nutter of Philly and Mayor Gray of Lancaster against the NRA. So you definitely have some support. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest, the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, making his monthly visit to the program, his first of 2015. If you have a comment or question for him, call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. A tweet from Sabatis2K4. Absolutely love the new bike infrastructure. Any plans for a connection to the South Hills?
Sabatis, what? 2K4?
Yes.
Thank you. You're one of eight people. No, there's more than eight. There's nine. There are a number of people who appreciate it, and a lot of people who would have preferred if I landed a UFO on Penn Avenue and blocked traffic. The bike infrastructure is only the beginning. This is not, you know, the whole city's bike infrastructure is Penn Ave. The Penn Avenue part will be expanded down to Stanwix and either Fort Pitt Boulevard or Boulevard of the Allies up to the jail trail, or the Monongahela Trail. It will then cross over the 6th Street Bridge, which the county is then creating a bike lane on, using probably one of the two pedestrian sides, and then over through the north side to the Allegheny Trail all the way up around Allegheny Center towards Mexican War Streets. So you'll be able basically to get on in Oakland, travel down through a protected lane all the way down to the trail as it comes down to 9 Mile Run in that area down towards the bottom of Schenley Park. Get on, either go to Southside Works or ride it over to PNC Park, be able to ride it up the Allegheny. That will be the infrastructure we'll have in place over the next couple of years. And then we want to expand it internally as well. So we're already starting in Homewood with a bike lane there that will then connect into some others. If you really want to see a vision of where this goes over the next 10 years, go to bikepittsburgh.org. I think it's bike-pgh.org. I could be wrong, but it's something like that. If you type in Bike Pittsburgh, you'll get it. And look at what their map is. That's how we were working with on this, and working community by community. The other thing about that, this spring we'll also be introducing Bike Share, being funded by our foundations, our corporations, no tax dollars going into it. But we're going to have 500 rental bikes available to anyone at 50 different locations. And where these locations are being set up is where the bike infrastructure will be going. So if you want to make it safer for drivers, take the bikes out of the equation and create areas where bikers will be on their own roads and the cars will be on theirs. This is not about bike lanes. It's about creating a complete streets model for the city of Pittsburgh, one that recognizes the importance of bikes, of cars, of buses, of people, and of people with needs, and puts together a plan so that they all can use public infrastructure.
It'd be great to see this end up taking some of the stress out of the rush hour commute with people being able to be on bikes and reducing the automobile traffic in the city, which is certainly one of the great challenges that the city has. Now, when you refer to the 6th Street Bridge, that's
Roberto Clemente.
The Roberto Clemente Bridge, right?
Yes, but that takes it north. What he's talking about is going south, and okay. We already have the connection through the Hot Metal Bridge to take it that direction, and there's already plans in place to expand upon that to be able to do it. What we're basically doing is creating a bike highway structure within the city that then it doesn't say that those are the only places, but it gives people a safe alternative to be able to get to where they need to go.
412-246-2002 if you'd like to join our conversation on the air. Also, you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. A tweet from Don, he says, why take the billy clubs from the cops? They need to protect themselves.
Yeah, so these were a couple of the initiatives we did early on, and some of them were under Director Bukar, some under Chief McClay. Very early on, Director Bukar, in a way to make the police more like the police and less like either a guard service or a military service. He took away the baseball caps and put the police hat back. He, this is Director Bukar, he ended the wearing of the protective vests on the outside and had them wear it inside. What he was doing is promoting the police officer through the uniform as a police officer and making sure that Pittsburgh police uniform, which is a beautiful uniform and has a long history, is promoted in a way that looks to a civilian as a police officer. When Chief McClay came in, he realized that we still had the billy clubs that were being used as part of the uniform. Now, almost every police force in America has banned the use of the billy clubs, and this goes back to the 1970s. Pittsburgh still had it, and not only had it, but had it as part of the uniform. Again, creating that professionalism that is within the officer has to be shown through that uniform. And you can, to almost a fault, look at the uniform and how that officer wears it and be able to say, you know, that officer's got it together. And having the billy clubs, the baseball hats, and wearing bulletproof vests on the outside took away from that. And it also took away from the way to be able to directly work with the community without fear or intimidation.
You were on Fox News recently on Bill O'Reilly's program in which he aggressively questioned you about Police Chief Cameron McLay being photographed holding a sign that said, quote, "I resolve to challenge racism at work and end white silence," end quote. That rankled some members of the force. You are supporting the chief. Explain the reasoning here.
Well, my buddy Bill O'Reilly and I had a nice conversation.
Bill and Bill.
Bill and Bill. We're, I think we're going to do it on right now. Little joke.
You held your own well with him.
I refused to be drawn in. I realized I watched it, you know, and so I get a sense of how it works a little bit. But he uses charged words or uses half statements and then almost
and
puts
cuts
it
people off all the time. It doesn't let anybody finish their thought. Yeah. exactly.
And then the thing is, you forget what it was you were going to say, and then you're on a new thought. Just like that, right? But the thing about it is he uses those as almost bait, like, come on in the cave, and then he hits you over the head once you get in the cave. So I just said I'll stick to the message.
Great analogy.
The message was, if you're going to solve a problem, you have to address the problem, and then you have to be able to work together, period. That was it. And there's so many people and so many organizations that want to polarize this issue. And they want elected officials to pick winners and losers instead of doing our jobs and bringing people together. I thought what Chief McLay did and why it got international attention, it didn't get national, it got international attention, was people wanted to know that a white police chief was listening. And it was almost like people were thirsty for that. I didn't disrespect the FOP's response. In fact, they said with his use of social media, they wanted it to be investigated. We are investigating and being respectful of that. But I didn't like the tone. I don't think that in the military, that even if there was an organization, it was like a union, that an officer below a commanding officer would take that same type of tone. And so that's why I felt I had to back the chief. And backing the chief was important, not only in the sense of saying that he is the chief and we will respect him, but also that to the community that has been waiting for this, waiting for somebody to finally say, yes, there's a problem, and yes, we can do something to solve it, having the chief and the mayor together show that there's a commitment behind it. So,
in defense of the head of the union, he's saying that his comments were not intended to be public comments.
Anytime that anything is delivered to a, you know, an official capacity, to a director, to the mayor, to anything, it's under the right to know. And I tell my staff all the time that if you're putting it out and you're signing to it, then just imagine that it's going to be in the front page of the Post-Gazette. I mean, that it has that ability to be the public's information. We are not a private company. And anybody who spent 2 minutes in City Hall knows that anything that's said is going to end up somewhere.
Your public safety director, Stephen Bukar, is among the candidates for Pennsylvania State Police Commissioner in the forthcoming Wolf administration. He's barely been in the job for a year. A lot of people are seeing this and saying, what's up with that?
Well, I have to sort of be careful on this because personnel issues are one of those things that are not privy to Sunshine Act. So I learned a long time ago during city council when we'd have our executive session, the things that are discussed regarding personnel are discussed outside of open dialogue. Having said that, and having the governor saying that he is considered as a candidate, I can then say, yes, he is. I support any of my directors if they're looking to better themselves in a positive way, and I would never stand in the way of anybody who I hired who would want to be able to do something differently. The reason that Steve Bukar is in law enforcement was, as a young man growing up in Washington County, his next-door neighbor was a state trooper, and all he wanted to be was a state trooper, and he got to live that dream and then moved on to the FBI where he ran the organized crime unit in northern New Jersey for the FBI, which is Sopranos. He was then promoted after September 11th to head counterterrorism for New York City, LaGuardia, and JFK. He then was promoted to head counterterrorism for the United States of America. The very fact that I've had the ability to have Steve Bukar as the public safety director of the city of Pittsburgh for 1 year in and itself and putting together what we need to have, which is based on integrity, is a benefit. If he's looking for something that would help him to realize a lifelong goal, then I'll be there to help him.
I don't know how much you can comment on this, but there has been talk that there is friction, that he has had some difficulty with county officials, most notably Stephen Zappala, district attorney. What about that?
Well, Steve is a disciplinarian, and I said it during the campaign. One of the differences that I had with Jack Wagner was he was going to eliminate public safety director, and I was going to promote a public safety department. And that was just a philosophical difference, but I said that the person I'd bring in would be Elliot Ness. I brought in Elliot Ness. And to some people, the directness, there's nothing phony about Steve Bukkar. The directness and the discipline that he holds, and he holds everyone up to that same standard, can be viewed by some as being difficult to work with. It's not one person or anything else. It's Steve, but that is exactly the type of level of integrity that was needed. We just had gone through a bruising 2-year period, and our police chief was indicted and then put in jail. And the one thing that we needed was discipline and integrity, two things. So we got that with Steve.
And somebody who's untouchable, as long as you're using an Elliot Ness.
I don't have to worry. I don't have to go to sleep at night worrying. I wonder what he's doing or if he's doing it for the right reasons. I know that he always is. And the city needed that and needs that as well. If this doesn't work out, he has a long career here in Pittsburgh. If it does work out, then I'm happy for him and his family.
We're talking with Mayor Bill Peduto here on Essential Pittsburgh. And if you're just joining us, since we started the program, our lead question was going to be about the fact that the capital city of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, is facing a lawsuit believed to be the first under a new state law intended to give gun owners and gun rights groups a chance at taking down municipal firearms ordinances. And as the mayor was settling into his seat, he let us know that as of noon today or shortly before, the NRA is suing Pittsburgh. So these lawsuits is sort of a domino effect that's happening, and it's certainly something of interest, obviously, to the mayor and also to our state representatives, including Representative Dan Frankel, who's been a guest on this program and is now with us on the phone. Representative Frankel, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thanks, Paul. Hi, Mayor. How are you?
Great to hear from you, Dan.
Hey, I wanted to really express my admiration for the mayor for standing up for the NRA. Many communities across the state, and maybe understandably, have been intimidated and have withdrawn rescinded their statutes. I think it's appropriate that the mayor and hopefully city council will stand up to the NRA. I will support them, and many of my colleagues will as well, even though the legislature passed this unconstitutional bill. The mayor rightly suggests that the court appeal based on constitutionality, I think, will overturn the legislation. Nevertheless, I expect that once that happens, we'll see another attempt by the NRA to get this legislation through in a constitutional way through the legislature. And I'm hoping that Governor-elect Tom Wolf will be in a position to veto such legislation if it comes up.
Well, I certainly appreciate your chiming in on this, Representative Frankel, and it is something that the legislature, I'm sure, will be dealing with this year. I'm not sure how soon, but you'll be reconvening the House and Senate will be reconvening after the governor is inaugurated.
That's correct.
Let me just add, and for folks who don't realize this, that there is one leader on this issue, one leader who took on UPMC Highmark, one leader who we have not just representing Western Pennsylvania, but every single individual in the state of Pennsylvania when it comes down to people's rights. It's Dan Frankel. And it's power that is given back to people in the battles that he takes on are against the giants.
Well, I thank you, Mayor and Paul. I mean, it's great to have somebody to collaborate with in the mayor's office, and he's doing a tremendous job, and This is another example, I think, of showing leadership in a difficult environment. And I appreciate it, and I know many people, certainly residents of the city of Pittsburgh, appreciate it.
Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your feedback, Representative Dan Frankel.
It's going to be good working with him and with the new governor on finding common sense approaches to address a lot of these problems.
We have just a couple minutes left, and there are more calls and tweets and emails that we could get to. But there are a couple things that I think are important as we wrap up this hour to bring up. One would be that it's been a year since you took office. So how would you grade your performance as mayor? I'm sure you'd love this question.
I think it's impossible. I think what did they say? The three hardest things in life are climbing a fence that's leaning towards you, kissing a girl that's leaning away from you, and being able to successfully judge yourself. So I don't know. I'd say a B. I think we've done a good job. We hit a lot of the benchmarks, if not all the benchmarks that we set out to hit for year one. But there's room for improvement on a whole basis. There's room for improvement on an individual department by department basis. There's room for improvement. We talked about Director Bukar before. I've had, I think, three now directors or chiefs that have been approached by other organizations to try and steal them. I know I'm not going to be able to keep this team together that long. These are not your folks that are longtime government employees, but while I've got this type of talent and Pittsburgh has this type of talent, we're going to swing big. And here's the part about that. We're going to miss, and we're going to miss often, and we're going to keep swinging. I didn't get elected, and I didn't run for mayor to just run the show that has been there forever a little bit better than the other guy. We came in to catch up city government to all the wonderful things that are happening in Pittsburgh and for this government to be a model and put the city back on a national and international map. And that is going to result in some failures. And we're just going to brush ourselves off and go again. And if we only get 4 years to do it, I'll never look back and say, damn, I wish I'd have tried that. We're going to try everything.
And we've got about 30 seconds left. Are there any campaign issues you ran on that you feel that you have not been able to address as of yet, but that you feel you're going to get to?
Lose 50 pounds. that's one. No, I think that everything that we talked about during the campaign are all issues that we have either put into place or have a process to do. We do have 4 years to do it, so it's not going to happen all in year one. And creating those priorities of how it's going to happen really becomes more of a say in this second year.
Mayor Bill Peduto joining us. Well, we've enjoyed your appearances on the show. We look forward to many more of
Something else to watch for. Anybody that has cable knows that the city is on cable. We're going to start doing programming. And the one thing that I want is Throwback Thursdays, where you can watch one of those old council meetings with Jeep and Ben and Michelle and Sophie. And
be interesting to see how those do in the ratings. We're out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mayor Peduto.
Thank you. It's good to see you, Paul.
Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.